Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we have a very special program, a conversation with Peter Buffett, award-winning composer, best-selling author, philanthropist, and an activist for Native American culture. Mr. Buffett will be talking about the inspiration behind his music, the philosophy behind his critically acclaimed book, Life is What You Make It, and we'll ask him about the influence of his famous father, billionaire investor Warren Buffett. Peter Buffett has released 16 records. His Native American-inspired music includes the piece we're listening to, the climactic crescendo to the fire dance scene in the Oscar-winning film Dances with Wolves. Also the full score for 500 Nations, an 8-hour CBS miniseries, and the 6-part documentary series Ojibwe, and the PBS special Wisconsin, An American Portrait. The book, Life is What You Make It, has sold 500,000 copies and has been translated in over 15 languages. Peter will be the featured speaker at this year's George L. Reuter Forum in Wausau, sponsored by the Community Foundation of North Central Wisconsin. It's Tuesday, September 25th, and this year marks the 25th anniversary of the Community Foundation, which has been responsible for a lot of great things that have happened in the greater Wausau area and throughout central Wisconsin. Now, if you'd like to talk to Peter Buffett, our lines are open at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. And it is usually easier to get on the air if you call right away instead of waiting until the end of the program. Joining Peter for the first few minutes of the program, we welcome Gene Tien, the Executive Director of the Community Foundation of North Central Wisconsin. Gene and Peter, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Glenn.
Gene, how excited are you to have this gentleman, Peter Buffett, here in Wausau?
We are so excited to welcome Peter in the Grand Wausau style. We are aware that Peter did a similar presentation in the Fox Valley region, and people in that area continue, Peter, they continue to talk about how great the performance was, and it's one of the most memorable things that they had ever seen.
Peter, what do you think of that?
Well, that's all you really want to hear. That's pretty great.
It's the truth.
Well, Peter, what will people see if they attend the Reuter Forum event in Wausau Tuesday, September 25th?
Well, I call it a concert and conversation because that is actually what it is. I play piano and I perform with an extraordinary cellist. So it's piano and cello, lots of multimedia with the music, and also to accompany the speaking parts of the show. I talk about growing up, of course, in what has become a curious household to many. And it was normal to me, but a lot of people are curious how I found my path, essentially, given sort of the mostly assumptions that people find are sort of busted through the conversation, but assumptions around having a big shadow in the house with my dad. And and then the philanthropy work, how it came about in my life, the choices my wife and I have made doing that work. And I take questions through the whole show, which is the conversation part. So I'm not just talking at the audience. I'm really talking with the audience. And they can ask me anything at any time, and that makes it really fun.
And, Peter, we'll be getting into all of that in the course of the next hour, but I do want to remind our listeners that if they would like to talk to you and be a part of this program, that number again is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742, and we do have wide-open phone lines. Gene, tell us a little bit about the Reuter Forum, what the Community Foundation tries to accomplish with it each year.
The George L. Reuter Forum was designed to bring nationally known speakers to the Wausau area to address issues of current interest and importance, and it is a fund of the Community Foundation of North Central Wisconsin that has been in existence since 1989. The fund is established and supported by family, friends, and business associates of the late Mr. Reuter, and we are very proud to sponsor this event.
And you've had some very impressive guest speakers in the past. If you could just recall a few of them for us.
Well, I can. They're all my favorites, I can tell you. We have hosted David Reuter, the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and also the son of the late Mr. Reuter, A.C. Nielsen, Bill Moyers, Bob Keeshan, affectionately known and remembered as Captain. Yes,
oh, yeah.
You got it. Reggie White, who played for the Green Bay Packers and is now deceased. Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary. And James Bradley, the New York Times bestselling author of Flags of Our Fathers. What we have tried to
You brought in James Carville and Mary Madeline
in 2008, and they battled it out on the stage of the Grand Theater, so that was very entertaining as well. So we've had approximately 20 different presentations over the past past years, and what we've tried to do is come up with a variety of topics, including we have representation from law, finance, international business, government, journalism, education, sports, entertainment, the judiciary, politics, and the environment. And what we thought we wanted to do this year, because it's our 25th year and we are celebrating philanthropy, is to give a nod to somebody who is extraordinary with their work in the field of philanthropy, and that brought us to Peter.
Peter, how do you feel being a part of this this organization and this event this year?
What a list. That's very impressive, and so quite humbled, actually. That it's amazing to be amongst that group, and so definitely an honor, and you know, again, it's incredible to be a part of that lineup. That's amazing. Thank you.
And Gene, the Community Foundation, as you said, is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year. Tell us a little bit about the organization for people who aren't familiar with what a community foundation is. Yeah, I need you to be brief, because I know we can go all for the entire show if we wanted to on that. But tell us what you do and how much your donors, because it's really the donors who are the driving force behind this organization. Tell us what they've accomplished over the past 25 years.
We are donor-driven. We're a nonprofit community corporation. We're a 501c3. We are created for the people of North Central Wisconsin, and our mission is that we exist to enhance the quality of the greater Wausau area. Our vision is to create a vibrant and livable community that serves as a magnet to attract and retain people to our area. So everything that we do falls within those parameters. And it's important to note that we currently administer over 300 different funds, and over the course of our existence, we have given out over $55 million to various programs and projects over the course of that time.
And you can see the results of your influence all across the greater Wausau area. And it's not just in buildings and concrete, which is an important part of that, but also in the way you've changed the lives of people.
Well, an example of that briefly would be the Talent Shop, which is a nonprofit organization that features the artisan work of senior citizens over 55, and they sell on a consignment basis, and their structure was not able to be sustained any longer. And mm-hmm. we were able to, through our leadership and connections and through the help of some great folks like Heidi Kapchar, who helped to make presentations, we connected them with an organization that can now serve as an umbrella, and they're absolutely thriving and have increased their the number of artisans that they work with.
And you've also worked on things like the downtown square. You served as kind of a conduit for some of the funds that helped transform downtown Wausau, the bike trails that are going up on both sides of the Wisconsin River. You know, we could go on and on, but I do need to talk to Peter Buffett sometime during the course of this show. So if people want tickets, again, it's the George L. Reuter Forum. Is that at the Grand Theater?
It is at the Grand Theater.
And that's Tuesday, September 25th. What do they have to do?
What they need to do, general admission tickets are available through the PAF box office. They are $30 per person, so very affordable. And for the VIP tickets, they are $100 per person, and that includes a private hors d'oeuvre reception, complimentary beverage, adult beverage, premier seating in the Grand Theater, and following the conversation with Peter Buffett, a VIP book signing.
All right, very good. And I'm going to give those phone numbers out, since we're doing some shameless self-promotion right now. Call the Grand Theater for the $30 tickets at 715-842-0988, 842-0988, or you can visit their website, grandtheater.org. And for those VIP reservations, the Community Foundation's number is 715-845-9555, or you can visit their website, cfoncw.org. Did I get that right?
You got everything correct. And if I could just add one thing, the evening of the presentation as a part of our 25th anniversary celebration, we will be announcing the winner of our voting process. We have our 25 nonprofits who have been selected to receive a $2,500 grant, and the top vote getter in our online voting process will that evening receive a $25,000 endowment fund, which will be administered at the Community Foundation and will provide earnings for that nonprofit on in perpetuity. So that
fantastic.
It's going to be a great evening. We're really looking forward to it. Peter, we're excited to welcome you to Wausau.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to come. I'm very excited about it.
Thank you.
Gene, we're going to let you go. Thank you so much for being a part of the program. And, Peter, if we can turn to you, why don't we start out with what I did in the introduction to the show. I played the piece Fire Dance from Dances with Wolves. Tell us a little bit about that and your work on that movie with Kevin Costner.
Well, that was an extraordinary moment for sure. What is it? Luck is when opportunity and preparedness, I don't know, there's something around that, and that was one of those moments. I had put out a second record. I had wanted to get into film work. The record was influenced by a book I had read about the Indian Wars, mostly in the plains in the late 19th century. The music was out there. I was trying to figure out how to connect it to something bigger. Saw that Kevin was making this movie. I saw a little thing on Entertainment Tonight. Was trying to figure out how to get the music to him. I'm not going to give it all away because that's a big point in the show. But lo and behold, he heard the music, and I did, in fact, get involved with the film. And it was a huge opportunity, obviously. Of course, you don't know that when you're doing it. You do your best. And you have no idea if the film is going to ever see the light of day, frankly. And so to see where that film went in the world and took me in my career was just an extraordinary thing.
Now, you did another collaboration with him, too. You did the full score for 500 Nations. That's an 8-hour Emmy Award-winning CBS miniseries. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, after Dances with Wolves did reach this height of popularity, a friend of Kevin said, you know, you have sort of opened the door to a history a lot of people don't really know, and you should tell the story, a lot more of the story, frankly. And so his friend Jack Lustig talked him into creating this series, this 8-hour series called 500 Nations, that really got into the very detail of what happened in the course of the, 100 or 200 years of pre-contact and contact, and then what happened after. And,
right.
Jack and Kevin both said that I was the guy for the score, which was pretty extraordinary to go from 2 minutes in Dances with Wolves to 8 hours of television.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you did the full score for that. That's, boy, that's got to be a yeoman effort.
Well, especially because it's a documentary, which I didn't fully realize till I got into it, as Jack explained to me. He said, you know, with dramatic film, you know, the action's telling the story. You're seeing someone on camera, you know, emoting in some way or whatever it might be. So the music can really lay back. It doesn't have to always be there. With documentary films, you got to really keep the action moving with the music as well as other things. You know, because there's nobody on stage, you know, in
right.
camera that you're watching. Yeah.
Well, you also worked on the musical production, Spirit the Seventh Fire. Is that the name of
right.
it?
Right. Yeah.
My description of it is: it's a Native American inspired show with live dancing, a powwow celebration, which the folks who live here in northern Wisconsin are really familiar with, and also you had IMAX visuals. It premiered on the National Mall. It was all part of the opening of the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian.
Right. And these are all, you've got the chronology perfect, because it started with Dances with Wolves. It really opened up with 500 Nations, and I met a lot of talented American Indian singers and performers and things. And that, kind of gave me the impetus to create this show, this theatrical show, which was actually on the lake, in Milwaukee as well, before it went on to Washington. So Milwaukee was sort of the preview spot, and it was just incredible to be there for, I think, about 4 weeks. right on the lake in this big tent, which is what the show was in.
I remember that.
Very great powwow singers, actually, Gijik Paiwasit, who's Menominee right there in the middle of the state. He unfortunately passed away this year, but he was a real linchpin in the whole performance, and we all miss him greatly. But I had a lot of Wisconsin performers in the show.
So you've got more than a passing interest in the folks in our state.
Absolutely, yep. Well, I married a person from your state. My wife, Jennifer, is from Milwaukee. I lived there myself for 15 years and really did call it home for that time, and still feel like it's home. So, yeah, the state of Wisconsin is very close to me.
Well, Peter, why the affinity for Native American culture? Is there personal experiences you've had beyond the work that you've done? Is there an emotional connection that we should know about?
Well, it really is more of an emotional connection in a broader sense of the word, because I grew up in Omaha and I didn't learn very much about the American Indian culture, and that was not uncommon. We as a nation swept so much under the rug in terms of who was here, what happened, and, you know, it doesn't have to be all a downer, you know, in terms of it, because it's a very sad and uncomfortable story to tell, but there's so much more to it. And so when I started to get exposed to it in my late 20s and 30s, it just opened up my eyes to not only our history, but the whole idea of really, you can't know where you're going unless you know where you came from. That was sort of the fundamental idea of the Spirit Show, is that we need to embrace, understand, embrace, and accept all of who we are, whether it's personally, as a country, you know, to move forward. And so the Spirit Show in some ways was about the culture, but more importantly, it was really about each one of us and how we can understand who we are better by understanding our past.
Now you've released 16 records. They're very diverse. They're not all.
Yes.
It's not like working on Native American subjects is the only thing you do, which folks who have just tuned in might get that impression. Tell us just in general terms about some of the styles of the music on those 16 CDs.
Well, it's really driven by my desire for the music to do something. So, in other words, even in my early years, I wrote a lot of music for commercials because it was a great way to make a living, and it did something. It happened to sell a product, but it also paid the bills, and it worked for me. And, of course, I did want to move forward, and helping tell a story through film and that sort of thing seemed the next obvious progression. And then with the American Indian work and Spirit, it seemed to take on even larger meanings, you know, and it was not only about our history, but personal history, the things we just talked about. And then, sort of out of the blue, although for specific reasons, I started to sing in 2005, and I suddenly discovered that I could start to put lyrics, you know, in my music.
That's a whole different dimension, you know.
Yeah, totally new dimension, and really took the music to a different place. And I'm now writing almost all of my songs have an element of social or political or, you know, some sort of message in there. So it's been very fun.
Let's listen to one of those pieces. This is a little bit of something called How Would You Know?
Ah, great.
Peter Buffett.
Killers, schooled in the methods of murder, are now spread throughout the world like ticking time bombs set to go off.
Nobody ever sold you.
You may feel hopeless.
Think you would ask for more.
You feel lonely and anxious.
Nobody
these enemies, the entire world is a battlefield, and we must pursue them wherever they are.
Drones have not caused a huge number of civilian deaths. For the most part, they have been very precise.
Of indifference would be catastrophic.
Side effects may include dry mouth, insomnia, sexual side effects, diarrhea, nausea.
It is only by understanding how we arrive at this moment that we'll be able to lift ourselves out of this predicament.
Ben Gordon. decide whether they are prepared to rise to the occasions history presents them.
That's a little bit of a piece called How Would You Know by composer, musician, Peter Buffett, who is our guest on Route 51. Peter, I heard some voices that I recognize. I heard George W. Bush. I heard Bill Clinton in that clip. What were some of the other voices?
Yep, Obama, Reagan, H.W. Bush. They're all there from, I guess, Reagan on up, basically. Weaved sort of into a narrative that basically I'm saying... We sort of are saying the same things in different ways over and over.
Where did that piece end up? On what CD, or was it involved in another project of yours?
Well, actually, I'm having a lot of fun creating a challenge for myself called Song of the Month. And I am writing a song every month and writing an essay for that, and actually a weekly essay in the Etney Reader, but monthly it has to do with the song specifically. So that one came out in August, in sort of preparation, early August, preparation for the conventions and the whole election season. And there's going to be a video coming out in a couple of days. And I'm just feeling in the world right now, of course, people have to do whatever they can to speak up and speak out. But also in the media world, you just got to get the stuff out there. I mean, I could wait to put a record out, but the truth is people are buying songs at a time, the songs they like. They don't want to wait for a record. They expect it for practically free, so you might as well just give it to them. That's my feeling.
And, you know, when I listened to that, it really did sound like the conventions to me. You know, I'm a newsman. I've been watching the conventions, and, boy, there are all those voices.
Yeah, absolutely. And they really... you know, are saying so much of the same thing, which doesn't mean they shouldn't be saying what they're saying, but it gets really hard to know, who's telling the truth and which side to fall on. I mean, there's definitive things that we feel passionately about, of course, but then you go to factcheck.org or whatever, and you think, well, now, wait a minute.
Well, I've been heard we're not supposed to use fact checkers in our campaigns.
Yeah, right. I read that too, and it's very confusing, the whole thing. And I think it's hard to get people out to vote and really know what they're voting for. Because even with landmark, quote landmark legislation, it could get turned around in 4 years. I mean, you just feel like nothing's really real, and it's quite frustrating.
Composer and musician Peter Buffett, philanthropist and author. We're going to talk about his books when we come back. If you'd like to talk to Peter Buffett, who incidentally, once again, is coming to Wausau Tuesday, September 25th as part of the Community Foundation's George L. Reuter Forum, well, you can talk to him by giving us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, adapting renewable energy and wood heat solutions to meet the needs of homes, farms, and business. Information at northwindre.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51. Our guest, Peter Buffett, composer. We've been listening to some of his music, and also the author of a book called Life is What You Make It. And I'll get that phone number again if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. Peter, let's talk about that book of yours. It sold 500,000 copies. It's been translated into 15 different languages. If you had to boil the theme down to just a few sentences, what would that be?
Oh, boy, I would say that it is not necessarily circumstance, but what you make of your circumstance that matters in life. I guess that would be the very shortest way I could say it. But I would also add that people hear that and they see the title of the book, Life is What You Make It. They hear my last name and who my father is, and they think, easy for you to say.
So, you know what? That was going to be my next question.
Point of that right away.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question.
Right.
You started out ahead. You're the son of one of the richest men in the world, billionaire investor Warren Buffett. So how can you say that your life is what you made it when a lot of people are going to say it's more than what you as an individual made it? You were born into some, pretty plush circumstances.
Well, and that's exactly what the concert and conversation and the book really tries to illustrate, is that You know, I only became Warren Buffett's son recently, which that's a joke, of course. But the point is, nobody knew who he was really, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, except people reading the business pages. And as a kid, I had no idea who he was, you know. So, in fact, I didn't even know really that he had vast sums of money till I was in my 20s, or I certainly didn't. I didn't think about it at all. So, when we grew up. We grew up in the house, you know, sort of famously, that he still lives in. So we grew up in the middle of Omaha, no fence around the house. I walked to public school. I had the same English teacher my mother had in high school. It was incredibly normal. And, in fact, I would hear that, and that's sort of what brought the idea for the book around, is people would say, wow, you're Warren Buffett's son. You're so normal. And so what I realized is that, you know, it was the assumptions around wealth and all those things that shaped people's opinions. And as I started to talk to other people, because the book is not just my story, it's other people's stories as well. And, you know, people who, you know, thought that because they didn't get into the best college, their life was ruined, and then they realized it was the best thing that ever happened to them because this other thing came about because of it. Stories of a teacher who worked in the inner city and saw these issues and then ended up working at a private school for wealthy kids and saw so many of the same issues.
So in other words, I read that section of the book and I guess we can go into this a little bit later, but you were talking about how kids who grew up in poverty, a lot of those children had the same problems relating to other people as children who grew up in great wealth.
Yes, and it's really because the bottom line with almost all of these things is the relationship between the child and the parents, or the child and some, you know, mentor slash authority figure in the best sense of the word, you know, authority. So, in other words, is the child seen and heard? Do they feel counted? Do they feel like they have unique potential? And, you know, we all hear stories of people coming from awful circumstances by whoever definition, you know, but tough poverty, whatever it might be, and going on to great things. And, of course, we see in the news people born of great wealth and making nothing of their lives. And, you know, so clearly it is more than just some indicator like economics and sometimes even schooling, but it's the parents ultimately that make the big difference.
You write about smug, wealthy people who have a sense of entitlement, people who have been spoiled by advantages they were born to but not earned. Here's a quote. They tend to have nice manners and nice cars. They have elegant hobbies like sailing and dressage, but beneath the well-scrubbed skins and polished manners of these privileged people, something seems to be missing.
Well, you know, if entitlement could be a four-letter word, it would be, because I think anybody that, you know, we, and this, of course, is in the book as well, you know, we do not choose, at least, you know, most people believe this, what situation we're born into. And so to think that somehow by being born into a certain family, a certain position in some way or another in your community makes you somehow better, or doing certain things makes you more whole. It couldn't be further from the truth. And again, you could kind of instinctively know it, of course, when you hear it and describe the way I did. But it is absolutely true. I mean, you know, who we are the relationships we make and the, you know, depth of our experiences, not the things we own in our garage.
You call it an Ovarian lottery?
Right. Well, that's my dad's term that I use in the book, exactly.
And you write, no one deserves to be rich or poor, privileged or oppressed, healthy or challenged. No one deserves good parents or bad. These are things that happen randomly to the life that has begun. And you quote a Dr. Madeline Levine?
Levine, right, yeah.
Author of The Price of Privilege. And I just want to go over these statistics with you. 30 to 40% of the children in wealthy families have troubling psychological symptoms. 22% of them are clinically depressed. And she goes on to say that 10 to 15% eventually commit suicide. Are those statistics real? And if they are, what do you make of them?
They are very close to real. I met Madeline after I wrote the book, and she said, you know, there's a slight tweak in one of those. And now I can't remember exactly what it was, and I have to go back because there's something a little bit off, but basically they are real. I mean, they are not, you know, way off at all. And I would say that it is, again, as I go in the book, that if you're replacing real FaceTime, real love, real surface area, as I like to call it, you know, in chemistry, things stick with surface area. If you're replacing those things with a credit card or, you know, whatever version of that you might be doing, it's going to create some emptiness. And you know, again, if you pick a child up every time they fall down, metaphorically speaking, they're not going to know how to walk, and they're going to wonder if they could ever walk on their own. I mean, that's what it really eats away at, is the self-respect. I think I say in the book, and I certainly say it out in the world, that, you know, self-respect comes from earning your own reward.
Is it true, Peter, that your dad, Warren Buffett, didn't give you or your siblings a big share of his fortune, that he made the three of you go out and fend for yourselves in the world?
Most definitely. I talk about it in the book. I illuminate it further in the show. But, you know, we happen to have been fortunate to inherit a little bit from our grandfather. And it was about $90,000 when I got it. And that was a lot of money. But I knew that was it. I did not for a minute think that my dad was going to run to my rescue. And I felt that he respected me and loved me for that. I mean, I thought that mm-hmm. was a good thing, because otherwise he'd think, well, you know, I don't know if you can really do it, so I'm here to be the net for you. Yeah. But he didn't do that.
Now tell me the truth. How did you feel knowing that your dad gave away $37 billion to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation instead of giving you and your brother and your sister a big chunk of it?
Well, it was nice that he gave us a little more recently for our foundations, but in terms of personally, I have no idea what I'd do with that money. I never, ever felt entitled to his money. I figured that was his success. I'll make my own, and it does not have to do with my bank account, and he never made me feel that it had something to do with my bank account. I never thought, oh, gee, I have to live up to my dad and make billions of dollars. I thought, oh, gee, I have to live up to my dad by doing what I love. You know, that was the criteria. Never expected a penny from him, quite honestly. I mean, that's the truth. And, you know, people can't believe that. But, again, I don't know what I'd do with that money. I'd give it away.
And you quote your dad as saying, a silver spoon in the mouth often turns out to be a silver dagger in the back.
Right, for all the things we're saying, is that, you know, if I love what I do, and I love doing it every day, and I always have, and I would imagine, frankly, although I'd like to think maybe I'd be a better person, but I have a feeling that if somebody gave me tens of millions, billions, you know, anything like that when I was in my 20s, in my 30s, in my, you know, any time, I may have slowed down a little bit and thought, well, why do I have to work? And then you start, again, to think, can I do anything? Am I really, you know, what am I doing on the planet?
Peter Buffett, Life is What You Make It is the book. He is the son of billionaire financier Warren Buffett. He's also an award-winning composer, musician, and he's going to be in Wausau on September 25th at the Reuter Forum, put on by the Community Foundation of North Central Wisconsin. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back with more of Peter's music.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Mobrig. My guest today, Peter Buffett, composer, philanthropist, and writer. And Peter, we're going to play another one of your pieces. This is a tune called Can We Love?
Silent space.
Tell us a little bit about that piece.
Well, I actually play that in a show, and it's a great moment in the show. And really, when I was 5 or 6 years old, I was sitting in front of the black and white television in Omaha, Nebraska, and two things happened pretty much simultaneously, and both of them changed my life. One of them, of course, was the Beatles. The Beatles on Ed Sullivan was an extraordinary moment. And when you're five, that's something you never forget if you're inclined musically. But the other thing was people turning hoses on other people. I mean, a five-year-old kid watching what was going on at Selma and other cities in the South, those things are indelible. You don't forget them. And I grew up in a house where my parents, you know, had the values they had in terms of every human being being absolutely equal and unique and qualified to go wherever they would go in their lives.
Your parents worked in the civil rights movement, isn't that correct?
They did in their way, in a variety of ways, actually, in Omaha. And it was very meaningful and in fact, went to they saw Dr. King and Grinnell College, heard him speak in Iowa, I forget what year, but they were heavily influenced and wanting to be a part of the movement in terms of what they could do in Omaha. And so that was in my blood to some extent. And so I really did feel that as a musician, composer, I should do things that somehow moved people, you know, to think about where their hearts are and start to feel them. and that song seems to do it.
Now, you call tolerance one of the key values you experienced at home, and I'd just like to read a paragraph from your book. You write, "Diversity is a spice of life. Prejudice makes our own lives smaller and poorer. You don't believe that women are the equal of men in the workplace? Well, your world has just shrunk by half. You have a problem with gay people? Well, you just deprived yourself of 10% of the population. You're not comfortable with black people, Latinos. You get my drift. Keep giving into intolerance," you write, "and eventually your world contains no one but you and a few people who look like you and think like you. It gets to resemble a small, snooty, and deathly dull country club. And is that a world worth living in?"
There you have it. Yeah, I mean, that's, and honestly, one of the things my parents did was bust the racial barriers and religious barriers of some country clubs in Omaha by, you know, crossing the lines there. And, you know, so quite literally, I had that experience. And I really do not get why we are in the position we're in now, given all we know about, you know, whether it's cellular makeup or DNA or anything else. I mean, we're all pretty much the same, and I don't get it.
I'm going to ask you a political question. You can ignore it if you want. But, but what can you say about intolerance, prejudice, and racism in the world today and the way that some people, not all, but some, have reacted to our first black president?
Well, you know, that's a time. I hear those things, and I hear people explain how it's observed, you know, in the way people say things and behave, and it's so unbelievable to me. It's astounding that someone would, you know, yes, he's black. I mean, he's there. You see him. But I don't think about that color other than how extraordinary it is that, you know, thank goodness it happened, you know, that we've crossed the color barrier in that regard. That's amazing. But at the same time, I wish it wasn't amazing. You know, it really is something that leadership and intelligence and all the various things that go with racism in terms of who's in and who's out, you know, that people still carry that stuff.
I guess all you can do is hope that we keep making progress. You know, I know that in growing up, I'm 60 years old. I've worked in a lot of different places, a lot of different jobs, and I've been shocked at times by the racism that I encounter.
Yeah, it is phenomenal that it still goes on. I mean, again, I go back to the 60s when it was such a huge issue, and there were cities burning, and, you know, I mentioned in the book that my mother had this bumper sticker that said, "Nice people come in all colors," and somebody had crossed that out and written white. And to think that happened in Omaha was amazing to me, because I didn't think it was in my own backyard. And the fact that it's in our own backyard now, 50 years later is stunning to me. I would like to think that we are evolving, and sometimes I wonder.
Well, your mom took you to worship in a variety of different places. You write that you'd listen to a fiery Southern Baptist one Sunday, then go to a Jewish synagogue the next week. She immersed you in all the world's religions. In fact, in the book, you call her the Dalai Mama.
Oh, the Dalai Mama, yes. Yeah. How fortunate was I, you know, to have a mother that would show me all these different versions of how to get to the same place, essentially. It was an amazing thing that she did for me there.
Peter Buffett, we've got to take another short break, and we'll come back, listen to some more music, and some more talk about this inspirational book that he's written. And again, he will be in Wausau on September 25th. At the Community Foundation's George L. Reuter Forum. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51. Our guest again, Peter Buffett, who is a composer and an author and also a pretty amazing fellow, also the son of financier Warren Buffett. And Peter, I'm going to play another music clip, one of your compositions called Amarcord. Let's listen to it, and then you can tell me about it.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, tell us a little bit about that piece.
I have to say I'm thrilled with the choices you're making. This is great. That is a piece that is near and dear to my heart as well, really because it's about my own life and my own growing up and maturity and the fact that, you know, you don't always know as a kid the various things that are kind of swimming around and come out in different ways as you get older and you have to deal with, you know, the good and the bad and understanding relationships and all of that. So that's really a song about maturing, essentially.
When did you decide that you wanted to be a musician?
Well, I played piano, and literally kind of pounded on it, you know, ever since I could go over and crawl and hit it. And so my mom knew I was musical. She got me into lessons. I enjoyed them to an extent, but I really liked just making up my own songs, but never took it seriously. I really didn't think really at all, I don't think, about being a professional musician, making a living at it. It wasn't until I went off to college and took all these other courses and realized, wait a minute, after everything that ended in 101 or ology, nothing really rang a bell for me. Even talked to my dad about potentially learning more about what he did, and we talked a little, and I just didn't turn me on, and it was a light bulb went off, and I go into details about this in the show, exactly how it all happened, but I realized this is it for me, and I took that little bit of money that my grandfather had given all of us cousins and, you know, my siblings and stuff, and said, I'm going to make a go of it. And
your dad really told you to follow your own heart.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, people will say, oh, gee, your dad must be disappointed you aren't doing what, you know, he did. And I said, well, actually, I am doing what he did. I'm doing what I love. And that's precisely what both my parents really drilled into me. And again, that's a lot of what the book is about, is find your passion, which is not always easy, you know, and sometimes it takes going down some dead ends to figure it out.
And you tie that into your dad's work ethic, which the way you write it, didn't have a lot to do with trying to get wealthy.
Not a bit. I mean, he happened to be born in the Ovarian lottery again, born into a system that rewarded his particular qualities in terms of what he was good at.
Let me read another line. Peter, let me read another line from your book. You write about your dad working in his office at home, and you write, as he pored over his statistical analyses of stocks in his home office, he could have been a rabbi studying the Kabbalah or a Buddhist monk puzzling over Zen koans.
Absolutely. I mean, that's how devoted he was, how focused he was, and of course that's why he's made so much money. But again, he wasn't trying to make the money. He just loved that so much and was so focused, and the money just sort of piled up behind him as he did it because it was the reward for doing it. And, you know, he didn't choose that for that reason. That's what's extraordinary, and I think is what is a key to the massive success, is that he did it because he loved it. I mean, the Beatles wrote songs because they loved writing songs. You know, they happened to be really good at it, but they would have done it anyway. And I think that's really important to note.
Now, in a chapter that you title, Be Careful What You Wish For Because You Might Get It, you tell the Greek myth of Midas, a guy who wished for the touch of gold, and he received it.
Yep.
And then he touched his beautiful laughing daughter and changed her into a lifeless golden statue. Why does that story speak to you?
Well, it ties into the Dances with Wolves story, and I think it's in the, I'm sure it's in that chapter, because I had been chasing after this dream of film, and you know, really set my sights on it, did lots of things to work towards that, and I got it, and I got it really big right away, and I really wasn't actually prepared, because I really, you know, I didn't, for whatever reason, and there's multiple ones really, but, you know, I didn't think something that big would come along so quickly, mm-hmm. and so I wished for something a little too soon.
Now, part of this whole thing of following your heart, you've got to be willing to make mistakes, right?
Because, absolutely. You find the boundaries, essentially, by bumping up against them. Otherwise, you won't know.
You're not playing it safe if you're following your heart. You're taking chances trying to do the thing you love instead of following the path that might be more predictable in terms of giving you an income or giving you a security that that you wouldn't have if you follow what you really love and what you want to do, and you're not concerned about the wealth.
Which, again, leads to the emptiness. I mean, if you're saying, boy, I want to play it safe, and, for instance, you know, going into medicine, it's an incredible profession and very noble, but some people choose that because it's also very clear, and you don't have to really think a lot about what you need to do. Now, believe me, I mean, doctors are amazing, and there's plenty of them that go way out on a limb. But what I learned when I went to college is some people take these safe routes that look complicated, but they aren't. And what they're not doing is saying, boy, what really turns me on? You know, where do I really want to go in my life? And what happens if I can't join the country club and can't have these kinds of cars and this kind of house, but I love my life on, you know, $60,000 a year or less? You know, you're going to want to love your life ultimately.
And that's where the real wealth comes from.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the real fulfillment.
Peter Buffett, thank you so much for being with us today.
So glad to be here. So excited to come to Wausau. So thanks for having me.
And we are again looking forward to Peter Buffett, musician, composer, author, and philosopher. A reminder, you can see him Tuesday, September 25th as a featured speaker at the George L. Reuter Forum in Wausau, sponsored by the Community Foundation of North Central Wisconsin. For reservations, you can call the Performing Arts Foundation at 715-842-0988. Visit their website, grandtheater.org. Or for those VIP reservations, you can call the Community Foundation at 715-845-9555 or visit their website, cfonCW.org. Special thanks to the Community Foundation's Gene Tian for her contributions to this program. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Special music today by Peter Buffett. Next week on Route 51, our guest is 7th District Congressional Candidate, Democrat Pat Kreitlow. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.